on Pilot TV this week, we are digging up another body with Sonny and Jesse in the sixth season of Chris Lang's Unforgotten on ITV. We're heading off on holiday to Falaraki with Jack Rook as Big Boys returns for its third and final series on Channel 4. And we're back in Motherland with Lucy Punch as her character gets her own spin-off series, Amandaland, on BBC One. I'm James Dyer and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a team of podcasters who are largely, I would say, sort of semi-immobile this morning, having consumed our own body weight in sweets yesterday as we went to the Next on Netflix presentation in London, where there was popcorn, there was ice cream, and there was, and this is absolutely true, an open bar at the Pick and Mix, which is very, very exciting. Kay and Boyd, it is possible you two did not quite partake as liberally as I did, but still.
No one
partook as liberally as you did. I'd have conducted a short survey of the attendees, and generally it was regarded as an extraordinary performance by yourself at the Pick and Mix bar. To the point where, this is what happened, we arrived together, we travelled from Bower Towers
yes.
to the venue in the centre of town, together.
Yeah.
And it was all very civil, and we were on a lovely journey there. Actually, it was a bit, you know, tubers packed, et cetera, et cetera. Got there, walking up the steps, locked, you know, checked in with the lovely people, the PRs, and then literally as soon as we hit the top of the stairs where the Pick and Mix section is, listeners, you just lost it. I've never seen such a visceral reaction. And to the point where I was standing there at one point after, like, you were like ferreting around the Pick and Mix for about 10 minutes thinking, should I just go into the screening and leave him? I thought, no, I better wait for him. And then Kay arrived.
It ended
up being quite stressful because I genuinely didn't know when to wait for him because he was just obsessed with the Pick and Mix.
Welcome
still.
To my
then
world.
Saw the ice cream stand.
Oh,
and he went mental
stand.
About that. And it was
Scoops
just,
Ahoy.
It was quite a display.
For extra context, I got there 20 minutes early and I was waiting for you guys to come. I didn't go in because I thought, oh no, let me wait for them. Saw them coming up the stairs, thought brilliant. And I had a friend with me who
you
was
did.
Also then waiting for you guys as well.
Right, yeah.
And I said, oh, right, they're just coming, don't worry. Because everyone pretty much was in the auditorium now.
Yes.
And then James, like a kid at a kid's party.
A literal kid in a candy store.
It was insane. And then you wouldn't leave. And then we got into the auditorium. And then as we were walking in, my friend happened to mention to you that there was also ice cream. And you left the queue to go back downstairs a floor. And I was like, oh my God, I was like.
I went back downstairs and had some of the Scoops Ahoy ice cream.
It was quite traumatic. And then we had to find seats for like four of us together. It was unbelievable.
I have to say, I was bouncing off the walls because I'd had so much sugar.
Oh
I was
God,
ripped to the tits on
nuts.
Pick and Mix. It was quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
I couldn't work out what element of it you were so excited. Was it like just it was free that you've never had?
It's a combination.
Before?
It's sweets and
free
sweets.
Yeah.
It's like free sugar. Oh, it's like the best thing ever.
He always gets like this.
Then we went to the same film screening office and there was like sweet popcorn there.
Yeah, there was. I had pockets full of Pick and Mix, so I didn't need any of the popcorn.
God.
So yeah,
it's like Alan Partridge in his big plate.
I was loaded. I had like, I was overflowing my pocket. There was like little like candy skulls and like chocolate bits of honeycomb flooding out of my pocket. As I walked along, I left a trail of them.
Next year, Netflix will have to up its budget for the Pick and Mix because it took it all.
Add a couple of zeros to the fizzy cola bottle budget.
They'll be absolutely delighted that our main takeaway so far has been James and the Pick and Mix. Yeah. None of their shows.
Have you seen the Netflix emailed us today because it was all embargoed until today?
Yeah.
We're recording this Thursday. And in the email, they've got a link to a survey. Can you fill in our survey?
Pick and Mix was great. Yeah.
More Pick and Mix.
Pick and Mix,
more
you
time.
Rocked it.
And in fact, the whole thing started late, I think, because he was at the Pick and Mix.
Of course.
Yeah.
They're waiting for the love. Could the gentleman at the Pick and Mix please come and sit down?
Yeah. It was a bit like that. Wasn't it?
Quite stressful for those around you.
And
not
then,
for you.
Obviously,
to add insult to injury,
Boydie and I had to leave half an hour before the end to go to a screening.
Oh, yeah, and causing another kerfuffle.
Yeah, so literally walked out in the middle of it, although we did walk out when KSI was on stage. So.
Yeah. I'd never heard of that. Okay, I don't know why I'm saying this now. I've never heard of that KSI show. Apparently, this is the second series.
No, I'd never heard of it either.
Do they market it literally just at kind of YouTuber-type influencers and no one else knew about it in the world?
I don't know, but Anne Mensah, the VP, was very excited
she
about
was,
it.
She was, and I have to say, I do love Anne Mensah. I've known Anne Mensah for years. She used to work at Sky and she's brilliant, but yeah, it was KSI. I can do with that personally. Anyway.
Yeah, we weren't too bothered about leaving during KSI. That's not really our content.
You missed Lena Dunham.
We missed Stephen Graham. We got KS fucking on.
I know.
We missed Lena Dunham. That kind of says it all, doesn't it?
It does a little
more
bit.
More for you too.
But there was a lot. Should we talk about what they showed us? Like, yeah. What were you most excited about? Like, so Netflix, you know, they made a big thing. We had a live satellite link up to LA where they showed us the LA presentation, and then they brought the local UK stuff out live on the stage. But they were going through their strategy for it, and who was it? What is the person who was doing the presentation in LA?
Boydie?
Bella Bajero, I think.
That's it, yes.
Oh, I thought you meant Edith Bowman doing the presentation.
No, Edith Bowman I'm familiar with. But no.
Well, you never know.
That's
you?
True, that is true. So from Next Vision, she was saying, you know, people accuse Netflix of not doing like prestige television.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Felt like there was a veiled swipe at Apple there.
No, definitely.
Because they were saying, but the people who do have prestige don't have much of it. I was like, But her point was that they have a very broad church. So they do prestige stuff, they do gourmet burgers, they do KSI game shows, like they do, which is true because they are so prolific. They have an incredibly broad cross section of stuff, some of which I am rather snooty about, other of which I would say is excellent. So.
Well, she'll be relieved.
She will be relieved, yes.
In LA, she'll be mopping her brow with relief. But yes, as she said.
But all of the information that, you know, they showed us, there were guests, Ben Affleck, all sorts of people came out, talked about the things they were doing, films, TV shows. They announced things, they showed footage from things. But of all those things, the most exciting thing, I can tell you, the most exciting thing was a blink and you'll miss it thing.
For
they
you.
They had a few little bits on the thing, just names of things in the background that were coming this year. And if you look really carefully, you'd have seen one of the things behind us said, The Diplomat Season 3.
Yes.
And I was like, come on!
And we've got a bit of information in this press pack I saw.
Oh, so do we? Yes. I didn't see that.
Yes.
Oh, well. Okay, tell us, what is it?
So the news was basically that A Diplomat is coming back.
Yes.
And also that Bradley Whitford is going to be starring alongside...
So exciting.
Which has been announced previously. I think
it had been announced. Yeah, so that we were going to talk about that in news. It was announced last week, so it's going to be a mini West Wing reunion. That's very exciting. It is Josh Lyman and CJ Craig back together once again. They didn't obviously say whether it was going to be a paltry 6 episodes again this season or whether we'll get a proper season, but you know, we live in hope. But yeah, I was pretty stoked about that. But it wasn't the only thing. There was a lot of other stuff there as well. Boydie, what else was there?
There was the Duffer Brothers.
Yes, they came out to talk Stranger Things.
In LA, talk Stranger Things.
We saw behind the scenes, some BTS stuff.
Yeah, some BTS stuff. And they said that, I mean, they would say this, wouldn't they? But they said that this is the most epic and elaborate. And so they said each of the 8 episodes is like a blockbuster film, which they probably said for the last.
Can you imagine
series.
If they said, you know, this is kind of a low key season. We've lowered the budget. We've scaled our ambition
we've gone
back.
Small scale. Yeah. It's all set in one room. And yeah. But I did what they said, get me excited. Then they talked about how they've got this long-term deal with Netflix and they've got 2 shows they're producing as producers coming out or being made at the moment. And then they themselves would work on and something else as well that they will exec produce and write and create. So yes, that was, I'm psyched, as the kids would say.
You're psyched and stoked. It looked sick.
It looked sick.
Yeah.
The new season, yeah. Although they do some of them, even from the glimpse of the behind-the-scenes switches they showed rather than actual clip.
Yeah.
Like they're in their mid-30s.
I know, they do.
Let's face it.
They genuinely do.
Effectively.
Because it's been, like, so Millie Bobby Brown was 11 when she played 11 for the first time.
Yeah.
And now she's, what, 45?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while. But what else did we saw? We saw
Adolescence with Stephen Graham.
I missed all this. Tell us about this.
James and I missed Stephen Graham, Lena Dunham. I'm excited to hear what you think of the Lena Dunham thing in particular.
Tell us about both, because Stephen Graham we're going to see in 1,000 Blows as well, so he's got a busy year coming up. But what did we miss, Kate?
So he plays a father whose son murders a girl, or is arrested for murdering a young girl. And it's basically shot, each episode, I think there's 4 episodes, each shot is a single episode is a single shot. And so on screen, at the screening, we got to see behind the scenes footage of how they did that and the choreography and how they, you know, made sure that all the camera work.
Jesus. Did you learn nothing from Boiling Point?
Oh my God, no. It was so impressive how they do it and how much preparation went. They did planned it for weeks, you know, like before the actors came and then they started learning all the positions of the cameras. Mm. And the way they spoke about it, honestly, it was, I'm so excited for it. And
My question I would ask is, like, did they talk about, because I find one as fascinating, because they are effective and they add a sort of a breathlessness to a scene because there is no break point in it. It is continuous. But I think the effect it has on the audience is quite subliminal. Unless you're like a film school student or a film critic, you're not really looking for that stuff. Whereas the pressure it puts on the cast is enormous. And you've got to wonder whether the payoff warrants...
I think in this instance it's really great because they were saying how you're just really immersed in it because it's such a it's a rapidly unfolding situation, a very stressful one where, you know, the police come, then they're like going back and forth to the station, to various places. And so it's really, I think it helps you be immersed in that drama.
Bella Bajara did mention it in her bit, didn't she, that it was immersive. And I do think, I agree with her on that. And I actually think actors like it. I think they like that kind of show. I think
it's like theatre, isn't it?
Yeah, once you're at a certain level as a professional actor, you want challenges. You want, you know, they're always talking about they want exciting scenes, challenging scenes, emotional scenes. That's what they're attracted to. And this is the ultimate challenge, isn't it? To do a one-shot 90 minute episode or whatever is hugely demanding, but I think they love the jump of the chance.
Stephen talked about really loving that enjoying that aspect of it.
It's basically the team, isn't it, from Boiling Point. Director of
Philip Barantini,
exactly.
Who we've had on this podcast.
We have. I think it's really exciting. Did you show a clip of that?
Yeah. Well, mainly like it being filmed. Right. So you got to see that. Yeah, it's brilliant. Right. Which they should do. Someone I was with said that they should do, you know, in the similar vein as David Attenborough, when they do the documentary and they show afterwards how it was filmed. They should do it. It's seriously impressive.
Yeah. One of my favourites of those is still, again, Netflix, Haunting of Hill House, that brilliant one. Yeah. I can't remember which episode it is of that, where they go from the present to the past in a single shot. And the BTS of how they put that together is extraordinary.
Yeah.
We should say also that Ashley Walters is in this as a detective inspector and also Erin Doherty. So it's great, great cast.
And the Lena Dunham show, did they have a clip of
that? And she was in the house, wasn't she?
Yes, she was in the house. And she's very excited to be at the event. She kept on saying that. She was very huggy.
Was it a pick and mix? She'd been at the pick and mix, hadn't she?
No. Be honest. But she was just like, I think this is like the first bit of press she's done for it. And the first time that anyone had seen the clip. So she was really excited.
She hugged Edith Bowman.
Yes, she did. Mm. I think she then hugged Stephen Graham, who was on after her. Yeah, she was hugging everyone.
I mean, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, she's a real cuddle monster. I appreciated it. And so this show is called Too Much. And it is about a young New York workaholic who's mid-30s, has a bad breakup in America, comes to London. She is played by Megan Stalter, who was in Hacks. Do you remember? We walked past the poster. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, it's the girl from Hacks. She's so good. She's a great comic actress. Anyway, she plays Jessica, and it's about how she moves to London. It's about the cultural clashes, her relationship with the artist guy she meets, Felix, played by Will Sharp, who we loved in White Lotus. And it's about their love story. It's a rom-com. And look great. The clip looked great. She's very excited about it. And
so she's not in it at all, Lena Dunham?
She is, briefly. Oh, okay. She is, but she's not. I don't think she's the main character.
No, right. And it's clearly autobiographical, isn't it? Because that's what happened to her. She broke up with.
She did draw inspiration from her life.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was no talk of Nobody Wants This coming back this year, was there? I didn't see.
I thought they did. They mentioned it as a show. Yeah, you're right.
As a big thing last year, but so that's, I don't think, going to be back this year.
There was no. I didn't hear any mentions of it. Yeah.
No. Okay. What else? There was an alarming amount of wrestling chat, just to continue the conversation that we were having on Pilot Plus. Boydie being the big...
Oh, yeah, that was funny, wasn't it? Yeah,
big SummerSlam fan, Boydie.
Yeah.
Frankenstein, we should talk about.
Yes.
Well, that's a film, actually.
Guillermo del Toro, that is a film. So, okay, so really, that's for the other podcast.
I'm afraid we're banned.
But yeah, this was GDT's take on Frankenstein.
That was something I was excited about, but I stand corrected. You're all right.
That's okay. What else was there?
In the same vein, we obviously won't talk about Rip, which was the Ben Affleck film.
I'll tell you what I was excited about. And this is absolutely the first time I'd heard of this project, was Tina Fey's new show. Mm.
Yes.
And do you know what? The Four Seasons, which is what it's called and is based on the original
Alan Alda film
of 1981. I went to see that film in the cinema with my parents, and I was 77. I was 14 years old, and I absolutely fucking love that film. And it's quite rare that you see it. It's never on TV. It's one of the I meant to check actually whether it's easily accessible on any of the streamers, but it was an absolute, I love that film so much. If you're into Alan Alda from MASH
and the West Wing
and the West Wing indeed, he wrote, directed and starred in it, and it is a brilliant, it's like a very Woody Allen-ish, I know we're not allowed to talk about Woody Allen these days, but fuck it, it's a very Woody Allen-ish kind of film, but in the best way. It's like a Woody Allen film but warmer, slightly more, you know, kind of embracing the humanity of the characters. And so it's literally one of my favourite films. I'd say it's in my top 20. I know I say this all the time.
Yeah.
It's always picked up.
Boydie's top 20 is extraordinarily large.
When I remember its existence, it's definitely in my top 20, the Four Seasons. And who better to adapt it into a TV series than Tina Fey? And the cast she's assembled, Steve Carell, Will Forte, Coleman Domingo, etc., looks great. So, and I thought the clip they showed was great. So I'm really excited.
Or
about
as
that.
Tina Fey described him, Coleman motherfucking Domingo.
Yeah, fair enough. Oscar nominated Coleman
it's
motherfucking
Domingo. It's like fair
Domingo.
Play to Tina Fey. Yeah. That's, we were all thinking it.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I was excited after that about the Agatha Christie. We got a new Agatha Christie,
Seven
Dials.
Any of that?
They showed a small clip. It had Helena Bonham Carter in it, Martin Freeman, Naveen Rizwan, friend of the pod. Great cast. So
the interesting thing about that is there's a BBC new Agatha Christie coming quite soon as well.
Yeah.
So Agatha Christie's never been hotter, has she? I mean, let's face
that's
it.
That's what they say.
You know, because
she has been for quite a while, actually.
Oh, yeah. She's and the showrunner of the Netflix Agatha Christie is Chris Chibnall, ex-Doctor Who showrunner, lovely guy. So I'm excited to see both of the Netflix and BBC.
I love Agatha Christie.
Of course, Are you hosting the BBC?
No, I'm not.
Because I got the invitation today. I thought it might be you.
No.
We saw a clip of Zero Day, the new Robert De Niro show, which is coming to Netflix as well. That's very exciting. I think what they were trying to do and I think what they succeeded in doing was underscoring the point that they have such an incredible volume of content because there is so much stuff coming.
What I thought, this is what I was going to say. What I thought was interesting was, and you may have touched upon it, just now.
When you weren't listening. I was looking
something up. is that she made the point about prestige TV?
Yes. And they do have prestige TV. They just do a lot of other stuff as well.
What was funny about her, the bit about prestige TV was she was almost like reluctant to use that phrase.
Well, she said, well, a lot of people who say prestige TV don't even really know what prestige TV technically is. Like,
I mean, you were adding a lot of stank onto that. She didn't quite say it in that voice.
No, but there was a letter. She said, people who say we don't have prestige TV, I think she said something along the lines of struggle to define what they think prestige TV is.
Yeah, she did exactly that.
Yeah.
And then, this is my point. Then she showed talked about two or three shows that were clearly high-end, like, it was like high-end, brilliant stars, like the Jude Law show that they showed. And she was so she then showed examples which were clearly like got incredible talent involved with big actors and the Robert De Niro
Robert
show.
Jason Bateman
so
and Jingle,
so
yeah.
It was like, well, we clearly do know what prestige TV is because she specifically picked out shows that had high-end creators, producers, directors, writers, and stars.
Yep.
And as soon as you see that show's got Robert De Niro in it even, I would say you probably think, oh, we need to pay attention to that because he doesn't do TV every week. He's not going to be in pop-up in the standards.
Also, the amount of people in that show, you know,
it's scary. That
Connie Britton, Jesse Plemons, it's full of people.
And they were quite defensive on two points, weren't they? She was quite defensive about prestige TV. And earlier, she had this whole thing about the New York Times article.
Is creativity dead?
Which must have mentioned Netflix. But I do agree with there was a similar article in, I think it was something like The Spectator here, where this bloke, I can't remember who it was, went on a big thing about how Netflix doesn't create anything original anymore. And I think they did a pretty good job at the presentation yesterday of highlighting the fact that actually they're less, they do go for original stuff.
Yes, they do.
And they do dare to give new talents work and they don't rely at all on, you know, existing sequels and prequels. She made the point about our top 15 shows, films of the year were all existing IP. And I thought, fair enough. But there was an interesting, kind of quite unusual defensiveness.
Yeah.
I thought.
It's interesting. I wonder, I mean, obviously there have been some editorials that have been quite damning about that sort of thing. But you're right. I don't think Netflix are necessarily overly guilty of leaning on IP because they have tons of original content on there.
Yeah.
But I think it's, we talk about this as well, don't we? That Netflix, they have the largest output, but they don't necessarily have the highest quality in terms of overall.
Yeah.
But that's not to say they don't have high quality. It's just that they have a very broad output.
They want to make it so that certain people, and it's already happening. I know myself, people, relatives, shall I say, and friends who only have Netflix. As a thing to watch on TV.
Well, Anne Mensah's thing, isn't it, about being appealing to us, but also our mums.
Now, I think that's insane because my mum, you know, I want my mum to, she has got Netflix and she does like Netflix. She's always asking me for Netflix stuff, everything that's new on Netflix. But at the same time, I don't want her to miss out on a really good drama on BBC One. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's a bit of a stretch for them to claim that thing, but it is happening. You know, there are people who will literally just watch Netflix.
But, the figures bear it out, don't they? Yeah. Like, they have more content than all the other streamers put together, and they pretty much have a bigger audience than everyone else put together
as
well.
As far as I'm aware, the other thing they don't do, which is we know some of the other streamers, is remove stuff from their library willy-nilly just to fucking save whatever deals they have or pre-existing.
Have they ever
not,
deleted
none of their
stuff?
Original.
No, not their original content.
They're always, like all of them.
Yeah, licensed stuff expires, sure.
But I'm not aware of any of the originals.
They've not done tax write-offs.
No, and I think that's because that's partly the way they do it. Their contracts, they don't give the creators
is that a good thing?
I mean, that's why people like Michaela Cole don't work with them. So it's interesting. It's very interesting. Can I tell you one more show that I really look forward to?
Of course.
And you're not going to expect what I'm about to say. Can you guess?
The KSI show.
No.
Go on.
The Victoria Beckham
show.
I thought that looked excellent, I have to say.
James,
yes. Yes. It was a really good dramatic moment.
It was her putting together some kind of fashion show.
She's a fashion designer.
That is literally. Yeah,
She was just basically. So the clip we saw was Victoria Beckham looking at the rain and deciding whether she would or would not go ahead with the fashion show.
Moment.
It was not high drama.
It was high drama. I thought it was.
Is it raining?
I thought that's the kind of moment where the makers of that show, the producers of that show, Nicola Howson included, were like, "Yes, we've got some drama," because it was
a gazebo.
No, but they already had a gazebo. But the rain was clearly.
driving rain.
Yeah, you don't need the diplomat. Like, driving rain is what you need.
I thought it was a very good clip, I have to say.
Well, like the diplomat, that last scene, probably like loads of minions.
Yeah, they were running out onto the field.
Well, the other thing is you don't see David Beckham. Of course, they've had their David Beckham documentary, which was within the realms of.
He was in the front row.
It was very good. That was really good. But actually, Victoria's the one who's got the most mystique about her. Still to this day, you quite rarely see her, you know, interviewed or on camera. So I think this is much more interesting inherently than the David Beckham one, even, because it's rarer to see her in her natural habitat.
I lap up any Beckham content.
I wouldn't expect you, James.
Yeah, it's not for me.
I barely even know who she is.
A couple of more things from me. It's a film, but the Grenfell film I thought looked really, really good. I want to watch that. Can't wait.
We'd miss that.
Yeah, it was at the end.
I saw the announcement.
Like, when I say can't wait, I think it's like I was moved in the screening just watching a short clip. Yeah. So I, you know, it's going to be a tough watch, but I think an important one. Also, Shondaland has got a new show.
Oh yeah, that looks exciting.
Yeah, The Residents.
Who done it in the White House? Was it called?
Oh yes, that's
the
right.
Residence.
I quite like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a gourmet burger that we are.
Yeah, that's
all
like the West
enjoy.
Wing meets Agatha Christie.
Oh my God! I mean, all of us. Something for all of us. Yeah. Incredible stuff.
Loads of great stuff. But mainly Tina Fey, Lena Dunham and Stephen Graham for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Pilot TV Podcast is brought to you in association with Netflix, clearly.
It can be.
Yeah.
I'll stop slagging them off.
They're not paying us anything, but hey-ho. All right, fine.
They paid you in sweets, James.
That's the Netflix segment over and done with. Should we talk about what we've been watching on other streamers, perhaps?
Yes.
Yes, I have. Well, I'm going to bring it right back to Netflix.
Oh, God, here we go.
No, because I finally finished Emily in Paris. Do you remember?
In Paris.
Yes, I had stopped in protest because I thought it was not great. But at the weekend, I just had one of those days where I was like, I just need something easy. And, you know, I thought, let me go back to it. And I still think it's not as good as the previous series. And Gabrielle's hair is a hate crime. But I love
a lot of people saying that.
My love for Sylvie transcends everything. And yeah.
Which one, Sylvie? The older woman.
Boss. Very chic. And yeah, it serves its purpose. It is entertaining escapism. So yeah, finally finished it. And they've got a new series.
Yeah, I watched most of that season for some reason. I can't remember why. I think I was reviewing it for somewhere. I thought my main memory of it is the whole bit about the tennis tournament. They go to the tennis tournament, don't they?
That's the first part of it, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of and I thought it was very clever the way they shot it. Because you know, they did. How would you shoot it at the actual tournament? The full, you know, full audience there. Was it extras? Did they somehow squeeze it into filming it during
the
actual?
I like what you picked up out of Emily in Paris was the tennis match.
Well, I mean, you know, all the other stuff's bullshit, isn't it? But I thought they did a good job with that. Because that's kind of, when you try and depict a big sporting event and it's very obviously fake, it's really annoying. But I thought that actually it felt quite authentic. Yeah. So that's my main takeaway, James.
Okay. The other things I've watched, High Potential. So it's dropping on the weekly, which I'm happy about.
It's been renewed.
Yes, it's been renewed. This is series two, the Caitlin Olsen comedy. And yeah, I watched episode two and I'm still enjoying it. I'm down for that. Traitors Final. Did you watch it?
Did we talk about that last week? I don't remember.
Maybe no, because it was on Friday and we recorded the podcast the day before. We talked about it in the build-up.
Wishful thinking on my part.
Yeah,
okay,
well,
carry on.
Thinking of your part.
So, and this controversially, is a whole can of worms, yeah, I'm not. Controversially for me, I feel there has been a little dip this series.
I agree.
I didn't enjoy it as much as last series. It picked up a bit in, when Charlotte and Mina, when that thing, I won't go into it because it'll go on for ages, but something happened with those two and that was really interesting. But I think for me, the finale was underwhelming. And I think having the Seer element was a mistake.
The Seer was the problem for me, yeah. They just brought in this James, they just brought... I'm just trying to get his attention.
He's looking at his phone.
They created this new kind of wrinkle in the game whereby suddenly someone got the power to decide to meet with one of their fellow contestants and find out from them whether they were a traitor or a faithful. And it just felt very contrived. They suddenly decided, towards the end of the show, when... By the way, traitors were being discovered, they were running out of traitors in a way. It felt like it was like a slightly desperate measures. But what I would say is even a series that's less... I mean, the last series was so brilliantly dramatic right up until the last second that even though it wasn't quite as strong as that, I thought Claudia was even better than ever. She was so funny.
Oh, my gosh, she was amazing.
She was amazing. They showed on the extra show, what's it called? The show
Uncloaked?
Uncloaked, thank you. Straight afterwards, her best bits, and it was like so many brilliant moments. She's just extraordinary. And the show itself is kind of inherently dramatic, even when it's not quite as dramatic as it might be.
So it's still entertaining, such a great format. But I think we got spoiled last season.
Yeah.
And also I could do with less sob stories, I would just say to the makers. You know, I feel like not sob stories, sorry, that's wrong. That's kind of unfair. But I just think they go into, they have long discussions about why they're doing it. And it felt like more than last time.
I tell you what did feel more, this is my final point, because James is about to fall asleep, is that it felt way more emotional. Mm-hmm. For the contestants this time, in a way that was slightly uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I felt they reached a level of hysteria, particularly in the round tables when they're all... They're
and just, getting angry as well, a bit too angry and you're like, up about
I just
it.
Kept wishing they... just remember, this is a game and everyone's... The whole point of the game is that people are supposed to double-cross you and they're supposed to lie to you. It's the whole fucking point of the game. If no one's lying to each other, then it doesn't... The game doesn't work. It doesn't exist. It couldn't happen.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So it's so bizarre that they get so... They take everything so personally, and almost all of this group seem to do that, whereas in previous series, I just felt they were less... Het up about everything. They were less kind of
maybe
emotional.
Maybe it's from having watched previous series. Maybe it's because also the money on table.
You know what the big final point? I kept saying my final point. This isn't my final point. They really missed a trick in the guy who walked off the train in the first episode. The younger guy, with the silly hair, the gardener. They should have kept him because he was. Yeah. He looked like
mullet
he was
boy.
Fun. Mullet boy. He looked like he was fun. He had a stupid mullet. He was like over the top, a big character. I don't think he would have been spent the whole thing crying and being emotional about it. I think they missed a trick there.
There weren't any big characters actually.
Do you know what I would like to see? I would like to see an interview with the panel of people responsible for picking the contestants.
Oh yes,
I would like them to discuss the reasons why and what, because presumably when they go through this, they're thinking, right, we need someone who's gonna be entertaining, it's gonna be funny, he's gonna get the concept, because obviously they're thinking about good television, aren't they? So they're looking for performance. So it's casting, isn't it? They are essentially casting these people and who they rejected and why they rejected them. So almost like a behind the scenes selection process.
These people also do Race Across the World. I think, right, how about this? Let's get a verbal agreement from James.
Oh, God.
Next series, Boyd and I can do a special on it, and we talk to the people at Studio Lambert.
Hey, look, if I don't have to be involved, you can do what you like.
Okay, fine. We've got green light, Boyd.
Yeah, I once did do an RTS event with the people who cast, or at least it included the people who cast some of the, like I'm a Celebrity or whatever. So in celebrity casting, which is a different thing. But that's a really good point. Yeah,
but it's the presumably they have psychologists and all kinds of things trying to work out, what, and then presumably some of the confections, like whether it be Welsh accents and whatnot, I assume a lot of this stuff is suggested behind the scenes, that some of it is contrived.
See, I don't think it's her,
maybe that's a bad example because I haven't watched it, but you remember like in the first one, like it was someone and they had a boyfriend there, like their partner was on as well and they hadn't told anyone. Like again, I'm sure a lot of this is constructed ahead of time.
Of course,
as part
of
the
they had had sisters.
Package.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. So well, my theory about the sisters, I've said this before, is that I thought they would think that the sisters wouldn't tell everyone that they were sisters, but they did. And I think that
it's a bit of a damp squib, slightly isn't it?
Ruined their casting there, because you can't tell them what to do. But yeah, it's a very interesting point, James.
Right. Do you remember the reality check siren that I used to have? That after 60 seconds of reality TV talk, the siren would go off.
You can sound the siren.
The irony of this is that he extended it by then making this.
That's not inaccurate. Okay, fine.
Wait.
Oh, God, here we go.
My last thing I've watched is Am I Being Unreasonable?
Yes.
And that's, I knew you were going to say that. The Daisy May Cooper, Celine Hisley comedy, which is still very funny and original and surreal, and I love it. So that's it.
It's in a double bill, a very interesting scheduling double bill on Wednesday night's BBC One with Amanda Land, which we'll be reviewing later. So Amanda Land's on 9 o'clock Wednesday, and then 9:30 is I'm Being Unreasonable. And to my knowledge, this is a whole new world, because normally the BBC has its half-hour comedies Friday, maybe, after Have I Got News For You. So this is a whole new development. Exciting.
That is interesting. Sorry, I thought you meant it launched with a double bill.
Oh, no. It's in a comedy double bill. It's in a quality comedy double bill with Amanda Land.
That is interesting.
Well, it remains to be seen whether it's a quality comedy double bill until we get to the review section.
In theory, a quality double bill.
Yeah. Boydie.
Yes. I went to a screening of Brian and Maggie. So, you know, we reviewed it last week.
Yes.
And and it was like two episodes.
Yeah.
We watched the first episode. So I watched the whole thing play out at the BFI South Bank, and there was a Q&A afterwards with Coogan, my friend Stephen Frears, who stayed awake for the whole thing. do you know what? Funnily enough, he kept looking in there was a little drinks thing afterwards, and I'm sure he was kind of squintily looking at me going, is that the guy?
No, he didn't have a dream about you.
Yeah. So he was there, and James Graham, the writer, but it was a really interesting panel. And the thing, what I wanted to say was, I really liked the first episode, and I watched some of the second episode before we reviewed it. Did you watch all of it, Kay? Sorry to interrupt.
Sorry, Kay wasn't listening. No. She was doing something else.
Yeah.
I was looking for the listener question.
Yeah. Right.
No, I didn't watch the second episode.
Well, the second episode is even better than the first episode.
Really?
And it really does build to a crescendo of excitement about their final confrontation. And it kind of, and I knew that was happening, but to see it play out is brilliant. So I would very strongly recommend to everyone to watch both episodes, because it hints at
it in the first episode.
Yeah.
We see that, like, he asks that killer question.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's more than that. He really gets into it, like, fully, like, properly. And there's another revelation I didn't know about that crops up that James Graham said no one really knows about, in terms of Brian Warden working for Thatcher at one point, which is really in the middle of this whole thing. So it was very interesting. And then the most interesting thing was Steve Coogan said that, because the Daily Mail did an article in which they said that Coogan insisted on cutting a scene because it wasn't woke enough, and they accused him of being woke, and that's why I wanted to cut the scene that was critical of Thatcher. And he completely addressed it. I love Steve Coogan in these things, because he doesn't shy away from anything until he went, yeah, I did want them to cut that scene. But I'll tell you what the scene was. And he said what it was right at the end. I won't spoil it, but Brian Warden is looking at Margaret Thatcher on TV, and in the scene they originally shot that he wanted taken out, he raises a glass to her and says, you're better than all the rest of them, or something like that. Or 100. He just kind of went, you're better than all the other politicians. You know, you're worth 100 of them. I think that was the phrase. And he thought that was going too far. He thought it was too sentimental, too much of a kind of, you know, approval of her showing. And so all you have in the end is him raising a glass to her. He raised a glass of whiskey to
her. Fine.
Which is much better.
Yeah. Mm.
So I thought that was a really unusual moment of, you know, I thought everyone's expecting him to go, no, it's not true. I didn't insist on cutting anything. But he went, no, I didn't.
So he was accused of being woke for having that cut out because he didn't want to be silly.
Yeah. And he says, and he actually said at the Q&A, the Daily Mail are here. Yes, I wanted it, Kaya, and it's nothing to do with woke, you absolute idiots. And there's, you know, you've got James Graham sitting next to him, who wrote the thing.
Yeah.
And he's going, yeah, we took it out, you know.
Well, we'll be getting into the culture wars a little bit later in the review section as well. So.
Yes. And finally, I may or may not have watched some episodes of The White Lotus, because I may or may not be interviewing someone in it.
Oh gosh, I'm so jealous.
You may or may not have got in late last night and watched it at silly o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. So we'll see. Yeah.
You can't give us any indication.
No, of course you can't.
No, it's heavily embargoed, Kate. Heavily embargoed.
Well, he's not
strictly
frowning,
not
so
for
I'm
review.
Happy.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So what did you watch,
I've been mopping things up the last week. So I watched the rest of Prime Target on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, it's on my list.
And I had a good time. I had a good time with that.
Yeah, it's a really good time.
Yeah, it is a good time. There were parts of it where my personal bugbear across all media surface, where I'm just like, computers do not work like that. And it just annoys me. The inner nerd in me can't get past the liberties they take with it. But equally, for the sake of drama and pacing and plot and all these things, I totally get why it's done. But they still don't work like that. It's like, do you ever watch The Net with Sandra Bullock, which was in the 90s? And it was just like, I was like, what on earth? It was just, if I click this pie symbol in the corner of this website, all these things, like, okay, computers are not magic. Let's not be silly. But so there was an element of that to it. But it was really fun. I thought Quintessence Swindell was great. I thought Leo Woodall was really good. I enjoyed the whole thing, and it kept you guessing a little bit to the end. Mm. Some twisty, turny stuff. I mean... the globe-trotting stuff at one point, it got to the point where you're just like, really? Another country? Budgetary flex in that show is extraordinary.
Yeah. I like the way when it does that as well. So it just kind of, they're much like, oh, should we go there? And then quickly,
we're in Cambridge. Should we go to Iraq? Let's go to Iraq. Yeah. Oh, do you want to go to the south of France? Let's go to the south of France. It's very much, oh, back to London. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's very Woodall's really having a moment, isn't he?
He is. Bridget Jones, the new Bridget Jones, which I have heard positive things about.
Yes, I have as well.
Yes.
I'm excited to see.
Apparently he's very good in that. So,
Yeah, my friend Leo.
Your close personal friend Leo Woodall. So I watched the rest of that. I've now finished that. I also finished The Crow Girl, which is really good, but also fucking hell.
I need to watch more.
It's so hard watching at times.
To remind listeners, this is the Eve Miles.
That's right. The crime about the body is coming up and the girl. It's got child abuse and all sorts of quite heavy themes in it. Yeah, but what's interesting about it is I want to say four parts.
Yes.
I think it's four.
Yes,
but it's not the whole book. This is half of the book.
This is like a rivals situation.
Yeah, exactly that. So I say it's half the book. I've got the book. I've not read the book, so I don't know exactly half the book. But the story doesn't
finish. That's his attitude to all books. Yeah, exactly. He just likes to have them on his shelf so he can boast.
Yeah, I absorb the information through osmosis. I don't actually need to read it. Mm. But the story just stops, and it's like, now it has been picked up for a second series, so we will get to see the story finish.
Wait a minute. You're saying it doesn't resolve the
story.
Oh my god.
So it doesn't resolve the story.
Isn't that annoying?
If anything, it ends on a proper cliffhanger.
Oh, that's going to be annoying.
So it really sets.
I'm surprised you didn't find that irritating.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's funny you should say that, because I was doing that thing. Like, I was on the fourth episode. I was looking at my watch, going, "It's 15 minutes to go. It's 10 minutes to go." I'm like, "This is not getting resolved," and I was getting a bit stressed out, because I thought, if they resolve this, it's going to be rushed and shit, because there's so much to unpack. And then they end it by dropping it's a fucking mic drop at the end as well. It's extraordinary. You're like, oh my god. And then it finishes with this massive bombshell, and I was like, this is really, really good. I have to say, Eve Miles, so good. And the relationship between the cop and the therapist in it, I mean, you need to watch it. You just need
to
watch it.
Can I say something? I am going to finish it, but what's frustrating is that when I was reviewing it for Heat, I had to read the press, the thing.
No!
Yes, and it said, can you avoid these spoilers?
And they listed the spoilers.
So I think I know what you're talking about, but it is extraordinary.
There are a few in there, and you don't see them coming. But it's so well put together, but it is quite hard watching at times. Like, it's properly bleak, given the subject matter, it's not surprising.
Oh, good,
but,
sounds good. But yeah, the only thing that's put me off is the fact it doesn't get resolved.
Yeah, but it will do, because we're going to finish it.
Yeah,
so
right. We have to wait. You do have to wait.
Yeah,
years time.
Yeah, but The Crow Girl is 100% worth watching. I'm a big advocate for that. So really enjoyed The Crow Girl. Look, let's take a moment, because I am on the last episode of The West Wing. So my rewatch of The West Wing is edging with my rewatch.
Ruin
here.
Everything.
So I've taken us to the climax, literally, and I'm just holding off a little bit here.
Please do not say that sentence again.
But so I'm holding. So tomorrow, the final episode, I'm waiting. No, I'm not going to watch it tomorrow, but it's called tomorrow, and I'm just waiting to watch that one, and then I'm done. And then you don't have to hear me talk about The West Wing until I start my next rewatch later in the year.
Oh, that's so preposterous. It's so annoying. Why do you have to ruin everything?
Yes, oh my God, that is my favourite, exactly how I feel. We were so happy, Crow Girl, brilliant.
I'm just
brilliant.
Speaking on behalf of the listeners.
Talking about all these shows that, Prime
Time. Let's not forget, Doesn't Watch. But
that's also, true, but the West Wing will do.
Doesn't Watch, Succession, all the big shows.
Well, I have, so there are two very exciting things that I have queued up for this weekend, actually. And one of them I can't, I'm going to have to be a twat and say I can't say what it is, but it's a show that I'm incredibly looking forward to. And I'm being provided with the whole series. I'm very excited about that. That's my weekend done. And the other thing is one of the big shows from the Netflix presentation, because I may or may not be doing an interview, I'm seeing some
which
episodes for that.
So you're not going to tell us the two things?
I'm not going to tell you either of them. But suffice to say, I'm going to have a good weekend.
Okay, so yeah. An entirely pointless 5 seconds.
Sweat. Well, I thought if I annoyed you with Jesus the West Wing, I might as well just double down on it.
I know what one of them is.
Yeah. Actually, you know both of them, because I told you the other one as well. Yeah.
Well, I've forgotten what one.
Boy's memory once again.
Boy doesn't give a shit what I'm doing my weekend.
Unbelievable.
Let's move on.
Okay, good times. Right, shall we have a listener question, Kay?
Right, okay. So this question comes from our friend Ben Travis.
Ooh.
And it's a multiple
Empire's part. Ben Travis?
Yes. Part one, if you were all playing the traitors, would you want to play as a faithful or a traitor? So instantly, Ben, I'm going to tell you, I would have to be a faithful because I cannot lie. I find it too stressful. I'm just not good in that scenario.
Sure?
Yeah, 100%. I always, whenever I'm watching, I think I would never be able to be a traitor. What about you, Boyd?
No, I think I'd like to be a traitor, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'd like the challenge of it. Yeah.
If we were together, like it was like Harry and what's her chops from that final episode of season two, and I said to you, would you leave me up the garden path?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Oh, he would fuck you up.
Yeah.
Boyd will come for you. When you least expect it.
That's so awful. Okay, fine. You'd be a traitor. What about you, James?
I'd be a terrible traitor because I'm pathologically honest. So I don't think they'd be like, "You're a traitor." I'd be like, "Yes, shit."
Yeah.
And that would be it. And I wouldn't be able to do it at all. So.
All right. Well, no.
But I think being a traitor would be the most fun. Like that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, also, I'd rock the shit out of one of those fucking hoods.
And also, having seen three series of it now, it's so obvious what you need to do to be a good traitor. It's not difficult, I don't think, anyway.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
Studio Lambert, you got yourself a contestant here.
Yeah. Claudia, if you're listening, as I know you are, Boydie's on for next season.
I think he would be quite good, actually.
I just think, yeah, anyway, I won't go.
Did they do a Celebrity Traitors?
They are doing Celebrity Traitors.
Could you be on Celebrity Traitors?
Are you calling Boyd a celebrity?
Stevie's Boyd Hilton.
That's true.
Someone told me, it wasn't you, was it, Kay? That the Celebrity Traitors, they are apparently getting a really good cast of proper famous people, kind of, and they aren't going to use any pre-existing reality TV stars. You know how basically all of these shows now, kind of, you get someone from Love Island on Dancing on Ice, and you get someone from Dancing on Ice and I'm a Celebrity. These are all
people.
Like of a standard of quality, if you like, that does not include Ekin-Su from Love Island, with all due respect to.
It's because it's got such, you know, there's such a massive fan base.
Yeah, well absolutely, it is the classiest, you know, literally on that, on what's the name, on the podcast, you know, the culture podcast.
Yes, Marina Hyde.
Marina Hyde, thank
yes.
you. She literally calls it, it's so classy. It's like, it does appeal to the, you know, the high-end, middle-class.
I can't believe that Ben Travis has got us back on the fucking tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, he brings it back because he says, part two of the question is, I just re-binged The Acolyte and lots of my little qualms really melted away on round two.
Hang on, he had no qualms. He went on about how brilliant this show was the first time he watched it. What were the qualms?
He says he had them. So, but he said it was excellent. What have you re-watched that's changed your feelings on a show second time round?
Not The Acolyte, I can tell you that, which is fine. It's fine.
A ringing endorsement.
Yeah. It's
what have you rewatched?
But the thing is, I think the definition of this is if a show isn't very good, you're not rewatching it. So
occasionally I'm not gonna name anything, but occasionally I've had it where I've watched a comedy. It's always a comedy actually. And it seems
You did it with the Ted Danson thing, didn't you? Man on the Inside.
Oh, we all did it with that, really.
I didn't.
Yeah, that's a good example. I would use that as the example.
Yeah, judging something on the first episode, I think that's the flaw, and that I've done that a lot. I've definitely judged something on the first and regretted it and gone back and watched it because people have said.
Well, famously, my greatest shame was that I didn't immediately love The West Wing when I saw the pilot way back in the day.
Well done for bringing it back to The West Wing.
Always.
So when I get a comedy and I don't love it instantly when I think I should, I always rewatch it because I think, I must have been halfway.
Who has the time?
Schitt's Creek, I didn't like that much to be. I thought it was fine, but then I just watched a random episode, I think, from series three, and I was like, yeah, right, I've got to watch the whole thing now.
Yeah, sometimes it depends on your mood you're in as
Ben
well.
Travis was asking us, by the way.
No, we've just re-nosed it, Ben. I hope you don't mind.
Like revisiting shows and re-evaluating ones that we didn't like. But again, I think it's difficult because of the volume of stuff we have to watch. Like when you rarely get a chance that, you know what, I'll go back and re-watch this thing that I didn't like.
You've literally done an entire re-watch of The West Wing.
Because
you've got
I
time.
Love
you
it.
Find
you've
time got time. To do what the
but
fuck
I'm not
going to
re-watch something I didn't like.
No, that would be insanity.
This is what I'm saying, but this is the question.
Oh, God, okay.
He's saying, what rubbish show did you rewatch and suddenly decide it was great.
He's not saying, like, basically, what have you rewatched?
So is he saying, if Ben, we need to get Ben here, really, but is he saying, have you watched The Acolyte, which is what, how many episodes? Like six, was it, or eight, or something? Like, you know, quite a big series.
He
Acolyte.
He had some issues with it.
Rewatched the whole thing. And, oh, wow, I mean, okay.
Yeah, and so he's saying,
he must have quite liked it quite a lot to start with. Is it cool? Are you calling Ben?
Right. Good. We're doing a live dialing.
Hello.
This is Ben Travis. You are live on the Pilot TV podcast. Ben, you're our caller. You're our listener question for the day. And you specifically said, what show have we revisited, which we once thought was shit and have now reevaluated because you have rewatched The Acolyte? First of all, I'm going to call you out because at no point did you not like The Acolyte.
I've always liked The Acolyte, and I really felt recently like I really want to rewatch it because I thought it was an interesting show that had so many great things going on and incredible fights. But the week-by-week viewing experience, there were little, you know, questions and queries along the way and things. I wondered how it added up, and I was like, that is a show I'm intrigued to rewatch and to binge. And it went down so smoothly on a second viewing.
You shocked me.
It has riled me even more than that show has been cancelled, because it on a second viewing and on a binge watch, it was an even better experience. It's a good show.
I mean, but you quite liked this first. You quite liked it anyway when you first watched it, presumably.
Yeah, I already really liked it.
Because it's a really good question, but I'm thinking, is there any other show that you've watched a show and you didn't really like, and then you went back and watched the whole thing and it worked, and it's quite a challenge, isn't it?
I don't think I'd put myself through rewatching something I actively like first time around.
Yeah. Yes, this is what we're struggling with this question.
By the way, we didn't have interrupted you not doing anything important, but I hope. Unless it was a whole setup with you and James.
No.
Okay.
We're not on Game for a Laugh.
No, okay.
I am in the middle of prepping our Empire Focus interview with Kishu Kwan to go on the website very shortly.
Wow,
let me think about this, because I don't think I've rewatched stuff I don't like.
No.
There is definitely, I'm in the middle of an Angel rewatch at the moment, because when Infinity Leave, I've somehow managed to watch all 144 episodes.
Love it.
Wow. Again.
Ben.
Yes, Ben.
That is impressive.
It is still the best show in the whole world, and I needed something to fill that void, and I decided that was Angel, which I was always quite lukewarm on, but it doesn't help for this question because I'm still quite lukewarm on it.
I mean, that's fair. Angel has its moments, but it's definitely a flawed offering. It's no Buffy, but I like it. It's a good show.
What about you guys? Well, do you tell me? I mean, I'm going to listen to this on the podcast.
Yeah, we've answered the question.
We've kind of answered it, and we basically came to the same conclusion. It's like, we don't rewatch stuff we don't like, so it's kind of a moot point.
I occasionally do, Ben.
There is some stuff that, like, I love the week-by-week viewing experience, especially for some of those kind of big Star Wars shows and the discussions, James, that we get to have week on week.
Yeah, where you like it and I hate it.
Podcast. Yes.
Pretty much every time. But there is something as well about then watching some of these shows in quick succession and on a second go around and seeing some of the dots line up, or seeing things that were seeded in early episodes that you're never going to pick up on until you know the reveals later down the line. And The Acolyte is definitely one of those shows for me.
Okay. Ben, hashtag save the Acolyte, Travis. Thank you very much for joining us on
Cheers, Ben.
The podcast.
Thank you.
Bye, Ben.
That was good.
Okay, a bit of live participation to spice up the listener question. Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers of most of the people who send in questions, but, you know.
I'm sure they'll give them to you.
I'm sure they will. I'll just dial them into the
show. I'd like to thank Ben for saving my bacon because I didn't have a listener question. So he answered my Blue Sky tweet. I'm still calling it tweets.
Fair enough.
Good bacon saving.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, if you happen to be a member of the Empire staff and you have a question for the Pilot TV podcast, do send it in to us at Pilot TV Pod on Twitter, on Instagram, on Blue Sky, and on the Pilot TV subreddit. Okay, time now for this week's news. Where would we like to start?
Well, we have had about half an hour of news.
Let's rattle through. I'll
tell you about the project I'm most excited about.
Okay.
That was revealed this week by ITV. This is from the producers of Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, and it's another real life situation, very controversial situation turned into drama. It's called The Hack. It's written by Jack Thorne, the most prolific and brilliant of writers, of course. And it's all about the hacking scandal when the News of the World hacked into various people's phones and caused them, and caused the closure of the paper, basically. But it's going to involve Rupert Murdoch and print, you know, and all the people involved. David Tennant stars in it as Nick Davis, who was the investigative journalist who uncovered hacking in the first place. Toby Jones himself is back, working for the same producers, playing the former editor-in-chief at The Guardian, Alan Rusbridger. And I have to say, my immediate response to that was, knowing what Alan Rusbridger looks like, you couldn't think of anyone who looks less like Alan Rusbridger than Toby Jones, but fine, we'll let that go. Robert Carlyle plays the former Met Police Detective Chief Superintendent Dave Cook, who investigated the unsolved murder of private investigator Daniel Morgan, who was supposed to be working for the tabloids at that time. So it also includes that case into its whole thing. And I have to say, kudos to ITV for commissioning what is a pretty, it's an area of the media that, because obviously the tabloid news shows won't go anywhere near this whole thing because it embroils them in it, a lot of them, you know, if not all of them. And to address this topic in this way, I think it's really brilliant of them, I think. I think kudos to them, because they're not going to get any good support from the tabloids and newspapers about it. You know, I can guarantee that. So it'll be fascinating. Well, I can't wait to see it. It's fascinating. So, yeah, I'm excited about that.
I can't wait either. The two bits of news that I wanted to bring to the table was Protection, a new ITV crime drama starring Catherine Kelly, so from The Crow Girl, James.
Yes.
And Siobhan Finneran. And it's a 6-part thriller, and it will centre around what happens when the witness protection system breaks down. And it sounds quite interesting. Also, the other thing I want to say is Doctor Who star, but more importantly, Am I Being Unreasonable star, Lenny Rush, has joined the cast of Slow Horses.
Yes.
How exciting is that? He's such a fantastic actor. If you get a chance to watch Am I Being Unreasonable, look out for him. He plays the son and he's fantastic. So, him acting alongside Gary Oldman.
He's still really young, isn't he? How old is he?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like barely like in his late teens or whatever. So it's quite interesting to see him, who he'll play. Fascinating. There's one other really, which this was announced today, actually, at 10 a.m. this morning while I was getting ready to interview someone that still hasn't happened yet. There's a new drama on ITV created by Suran Jones and Anne-Marie O'Connor, who's a writer, starring Suran Jones and Jodie Whittaker. Mm. How about that? That is a quality duo.
What's it called, Boyd?
It is called Frauds. Mm. Okay, Frauds. And it is Sam, played by Jodie Whittaker, has been content to live a life of quiet anonymity in the hills of southern Spain, while her grifting partner Bert, played by Suran Jones, she's called Bert, has spent the last decade in a Spanish prison cell with a burning desire to pull off one final job. So it sounds interesting.
Mm, sounds good.
Well, they're a duo, effectively. James, can you beat that in news?
No, I can't beat that, but I can share with you that Elliot Page has announced that his Page Boy production company is going to be making a TV adaptation of Beyond Two Souls. Now, this is a video game by Quantic Dreams, which came out in the noughties, and it starred Elliot Page, and it's about... Let me bring up the actual plot so I can remember the details of it. It's been a very long time since I've played it, but it's about a young woman called Jodie Holmes, and she has these supernatural abilities. There's kind of this entity called Aiden that follows her around, and when you play the game, you're controlling her, but there's this sort of supernatural force that accompanies her, and it's like a conspiracy type thing. So it's interesting because this was a game that Elliot Page was actually in, but and Quantic Dreams is a, their games are slightly odd in that they're very, very narratively driven. They're very like little interactive movies. I don't think this one had the strongest story, if I'm honest with you. I like a number of their games. This actually isn't one of them. So I'm more intrigued than fascinated or excited about this one. But yeah, Beyond Two Souls, currently in development. There was also a little bit of news on, I don't know if you know, the Legally Blonde TV show that is starting production in March. I didn't even know that was going ahead, but it is actually happening and it's beginning production in March. So, yeah.
Exciting.
So a little bit of news shared by Reese Witherspoon. Also, you know how George R.R. Martin has been slagging off House of the Dragon every chance he gets recently? He said some nice things about the upcoming Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is the Dunk and Egg spin-off show, which I'm very excited about, having read the novellas.
Of course you have.
Yeah. And so he thinks it's very faithful. He's very happy with that. So, good.
Reason to.
Well done, George. Now, please get back to writing. Let's move on then to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have the sixth season of ITV's Brilliant Unforgotten from Chris Lang. And also the second series, which teams up Sanjeev Bhaskar with Sinead Keenan after Nicola Walker departed the show. So this one sees a body in the mud, a grieving widow, and a multi-front skirmish in the culture wars. Boydie, what has series six of the show got in its backpack?
Well, what it has got in its backpack, I would say, is a typically gripping main central whodunit storyline about this kind of corpse that's been cut up and thrown into this this marshland kind of area to discover like a leg that's been severed.
I don't know, do I?
A severed leg.
Yeah, it's quite this quite vivid. If you're into that kind of thing, post mortem severed leg discussion and analysis. So the Central Mysteries is intriguing as ever. The relationship between Sonny and Jess, Sanjeev and Sinead, is I think refreshingly kind of open and free of stress now. Because remember initially, to start with, they didn't trust each other and he was resentful getting a new boss after his previous one died, etc., etc. Now they're on a very happy place and they're working well together and they respect each other. And seemingly that's true of all of the colleagues as far as she's concerned. She's got her own drama involving her husband still.
Yeah.
If you remember what happened to him at the end of the last episode, and she actually... This might be a spoiler. We can't go into that.
they had marital issues, yes, but they decided to give it a go.
Yeah, but that was in the last two. So that's ongoing. Sonny himself is like, I think he's looking at dating apps. Getting friendly with someone. Again, that's a spoiler. We've got to be very vague in this review and remind everyone because, otherwise we'll have broken embargo. What I thought was most fascinating about the whole thing is it's really addressing, and not just one or two issues, hot button issues at the moment, but like a whole myriad.
Isn't it just?
There's like wokeness, there's woke academic kind of storyline.
Incel culture.
Incel culture, thank you. There's an autistic guy who's actually played by an autistic actor and has quite rightly, Max Fairley, plays this guy called Marty who's living with his mother and they're living in this kind of squalid home with it's where they're clearly hoarded. There's loads of hoarded stuff there, and they both have issues. But I thought that that's a really interesting area to explore. That Myanna Buring's character works for a GB News
news channel. Fascinating.
Yeah, really interesting. She's like a professional.
Did they offer you a TV slot on there? Boy,
sadly not. I'm sure it's only a matter of time. She is like a right wing voice for hire, basically, and then there's this kind of whole woke storyline involving Victoria Hamilton's character, who's a history lecturer, and she gets in trouble for something she's said.
I'm going to talk about this because I don't think it's a key plot point. So she gets in trouble primarily because a student asks her for books from writers of colour.
Yeah.
And she provides one of them with a book which has, shall we say, a provocative title involving a certain N-word.
Yes.
And it gets her in trouble with the union and the school and whatnot. Yeah. What I found really interesting about this is that's a true story. So that's a very specific thing because I was listening to Things Fall Apart, which is the Mark Ronson podcast, which is about the culture war and how all these various things happened. And this story is covered in it. So this was in 2016. It was a dean at an American university and they had a visit from a student who wanted access to more books by black authors. And so she turned around and she gave him the autobiography of Malcolm X, and she had the autobiography of Dick Gregory, the comedian, actor, and activist. And the title of that autobiography is just The N-Word. That is the name of it. And as a result of that, there was an outcry. The student complained, and that particular teacher ultimately didn't get fired. They essentially were suspended and then resigned as a result of it because they were disgusted by the whole thing. So I think it's really interesting that Chris Lang has drawn from a number of very real things to inform aspects.
And I haven't finished yet because the last storyline, which involves a character called Asif, played by Ella Melas. He's an Afghan refugee. And you see, it starts off with you seeing these refugees arriving in a lorry kind of thing, and what happens to them. So I watched this first episode and I thought, what Chris Lang's doing here is five series of really high quality, really popular and critically acclaimed series of his show. He thought, fuck it. I have no evidence for this. I haven't interviewed him for this series. I think it's just, I'm going to just address everything that's what's going on in society today, various divisive things that are happening to our society and incorporate them into my very popular, massive hit thriller, crime thriller, whodunit show. And done this brilliantly. So, yeah, I think it's really impressive how he is. And so far, I've watched three, I think, of the six. And as ever, it's such a clever format because you really want to see how these seemingly disparate characters tie together with the central.
And it's never clear until several episodes in. You're like, how did?
And it's so inherently.
That's the joy as the audience. Yeah. As a you know, so, as the audience, right, yeah, trying to figure out how are they connected. Yeah. I love it for that reason.
There are some surprises in this one as well, which is nice.
Yeah, not give anything
away. I'm not giving anything away.
He's doing it with his eyes.
I'm doing it with my eyes. Spoiler eyes.
Yeah, that's the reason why I love it. And you're right. It covers so, it holds a mirror up to what's going on in society at the moment. But I like it because it's not heavy-handed or preachy, I don't think.
No,
I think it's so
completely
artfully, skillfully done, as you would expect. So I enjoyed it immensely. I've limited myself to just watching one episode, but because I wasn't sure if we were going to do it as a weekly spoiler special.
Oh, yeah. I'd already watched three.
I'd already gone ahead as well.
Yes. Oh, interesting. We had some feedback about that, about, you know, showing more restraint, shall we say?
Yeah, I'm not good at that.
Yes,
sorry.
Yeah.
But it's especially, it's so Moorish, this show is. And it's so, but also it's very much a show you need to concentrate on, because sometimes if you don't pay attention, you can lose the threads of some of the storylines because it's quite involved. I mean, look, as you should pay attention. You shouldn't be on your phone when you're watching these things. All I'm saying, there's an element of like to keep all of the plate spinning, you need to pay attention because otherwise you'll miss something. But yeah, really just great stuff, great performances, brilliant storytelling. I love this. This is the jewel in ITV's crown, Unforgotten is, and I adore it.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
The end.
Unforgotten then, which lands on the ITV when, Boydie?
Sunday the 9th, is it, of February?
Sunday the 9th of February, we think. Okay, brilliant.
ITV 9 o'clock. I think they're making it all available on ITVX as well, but I'm not 100%
sure. There you go. So there'd be no point doing a weekly sports special because everyone would be binging it.
I don't think everyone will. I think people like to watch it weekly. And anyway, I might have got that wrong. I should have checked. So it's definitely, Sunday 9th, 9 o'clock, ITV1.
Pilot
and
TV.
Monday. I think they're showing it Sundays and Mondays for the next 3 weeks.
Okay. Pilot TV bringing you all of the concrete facts. Next up this week, we have the return of Jack Rook's Big Boys, which sees Dylan Llewellyn and John Poynting and the gang return for a third and final series, which begins with an impromptu trip to Falaraki, because of course it does. And who better to talk about debauched Greek getaways and general Club 1830 behaviour than our renowned party girl, Kay Romero.
I love this show so much, as you know, and I'm so happy that it starts off with this double bill. As you say, the gang heads to Greece, courtesy of the legend that is Cousin Shannon, who I adore, played by Harriet Walters. She wins big on the bingo and takes the family and assorted friends to Falaraki, as James said. And it is very amusing what goes down, literally, there. Poor Jack gets a bad case of sunburn. Lots of stuff happens between Danny and Corinne, who are together, I'm thrilled to say, and much more. I love this show so much because Jack Rook is such a fantastic storyteller. So one minute you're guffawing, you know, as you reminisce what it was like to be that young at university, getting up to stupid stuff. And the next he has you on your knees weeping because he's like either tapping into what it feels like to be grief-stricken and still, you know, suffering a loss or heartbreak and stuff like that. And I just think he does it so, again, skillfully that, you know, you don't begrudge him manipulating your emotions as you go through a spectrum of them when you watch a single episode. So I am devastated this is over. I'm really sad, but I think it was the right decision to make. Third series is the perfect place to end. I have only watched two episodes. Again, I haven't binged. I've got all of them available to watch.
Such self-control.
Yeah,
I know, because I just want to savour it. I don't want it to be over. So
you're
like
Sting.
Am I?
Yeah.
In what
it's
way?
Often said.
No. No one's getting the tantric sex reference. Okay, fine.
Oh my God.
Let's move on. It wasn't Sting saying that he used to have sex for like 7 hours at a time because he has this.
That's not the first thing you think of with Sting.
No, apparently.
And I still don't understand what you're
I'm just saying, this is self control.
Oh,
yes, exactly that. Delayed gratification, incredible self control.
Yeah. Okay.
What you need to know is I need the contact for HR. Carry on.
Yeah, exactly.
Cancelled live on the podcast.
It is going out as a double bill on Sunday, the 9th as well, same day as I've forgotten. But what's also interesting is they're putting it out, if you're on the highest level of channel4.com, they're streaming.
I love the way you're describing Channel 4 like it's Scientology. If you're at the highest level of Channel 4.
If you pay for the full channel4.com streaming service, you get it early, you get a week early.
Oh, wow.
So you get to see this Sunday.
Is that what they do?
Yeah, that's what they've done. Well, they've done this with Big Boys, this final series. So that's enticing people.
I would pay the money for
that. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people will. But, oh my God, it's so... The mix of... quite some often quite poignant little observations about way relationships work and people miscommunicating with each other and not being a lot. There's a little theme I picked up of like various people not wanting to fully enter into a relationship with someone, being almost scared of what's going to happen to them, and then finally kind of going for it. With all of that, which is really often like moving and interesting and quite, you know, emotional without milking it, with the fact that it's so funny that and it hits the absolute pitch perfect point where it's not simplistic gags and it's not silly gags that James would have in his famous.
That is absolutely true.
It all comes from the characters, and it all comes from Jack Rook's genius for using rudeness, bawdiness. You know, it's kind of like the 21st century equivalent of Carry On, but times a million, because it's so much wittier than, I love the Carry On films, but it's like a Carry On film, especially this first one.
Carry On Valeraki.
But it's so funny and smart and clever. His observations are so brilliant. There's one line where someone says to someone else, "You need to read more Catelyn Moran." And I thought, it's set in 2015, this series. I just thought things like that, just little references that
great
other people...
Great cultural references throughout.
You care so much about the characters. They're all brilliant. Dylan Llewellyn, John Poynting, they're all fantastic actors.
Camille
Kadoori? No. Well, Camille Kadoori is a legend. I mean, she doesn't need flagging. She's absolutely brilliant. But did I tell you who my MVP is that I don't think it has to be
Cousin Shannon.
No.
Who?
Yemi.
Oh,
Yemi, played by Elisa Adele, is hilarious and brilliantly honest, particularly with... He's like a mixture of Jack's kind of a gay advisor, advising him about various sex matters and, you know, more than that. And he's so brilliant. He's my most underrated MVP of the show. And I think Jack was giving him more and more to do as the series have gone on. I think he was quite a small character to begin with. And now he goes on the holiday to Faliraki, spoiler alert. And he's just he's brilliantly funny and often just will say whatever comes into his head. But it's always like the truth. He's like the kind of truth establisher, I feel. So yeah, it's just even better than ever. Brilliant.
Yeah, you're right. He becomes Jack Guru, doesn't he?
Yeah. And now I think it's brilliant that it's ending. You know, always good to end on a high, and this will be, I'm sure, end on a massive high. But I can't wait to see what Jack Rook does next, because obviously this is very autobiographical, as he proudly states, you know, and it's fairly obvious based on his own experiences to a large extent. So I can't wait to see what he does next. I'll be fascinated.
He's a genius.
There's a fun George Michael reference in the first episode to this.
Completely.
But I won't go into detail as well. The Men Are Cunts song was almost spit your tea out highlight moment. Yeah. The thing I always come back to with this show is, A, he is so good at one-liners, like, as in his writing is very, very sharp. And exactly as you say, it is bawdy, which is naturally where my comedy lies, but it's exceptionally well written, which I love. And it's not silly at all. And the characters have heart and depth, and they're believable, and they're not too heightened. But also, and I find fascinating about this, like, props to whoever edits this show. The editing is fucking on point in the show.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
The timing of every little bon mot as it's dropped is split-second perfect.
You're right. In fact, I was going to mention the cut from when she looks at him, Jack, when he gets his sunburn, and he cuts to him with the sunburn.
It's
brilliant.
It's amazing. Yeah. But even at the beginning, where they're cross-cutting the two conversations, pin precision accuracy, and just when they're in the room, they're having discussion about going to Faliraki, it's so well cut. And I don't necessarily mean quick cuts, although those work really well, that even the little pauses are to the exact second to make them maximally effective. And I just think a lot of people do say, like, you know, comedies are created in a room, but they are really made in the edit room. And I think this is a really good example of great writing, great performances, all of that. But without that really just like on point editing, I don't think it would be as great as it truly is.
Do you know what? That's so interesting, because I don't tend to... I mean, I will have probably picked it up subliminally when I'm watching it, but I don't pick up on that kind of stuff, so I'm going to rewatch it. That's really good.
Fabulous. So I'd love to look up who the editor is. I don't have it here. If we find out, maybe we'll shout out on next week's show. But props to the editor of Big Boys.
Absolutely.
And all the cast and writers.
And all the cast and Jack Rook himself. Obviously, it's not just the editor, it is everyone. But yes. So, Boydie, when is this on?
Well, it's available, as I said, on channel4.com if you're one of a paying customer for that.
Yes, if you are an elite level one Channel 4-ite.
Yeah, on Sunday, 2nd of February, which is just gone, in fact. So it's available now if you're listening to this, if you want to pay for it. But then it's going out to everyone on Channel 4 on Sunday, the 9th of February, 10 p.m. and double bill. 10:30 p.m. Kay's laughing at my comprehensive TX details.
It's available now if you want to pay for it. There you go, words to live by.
Yeah.
Now, let's come to this week's final show, and it is Amandaland, which takes Lucy Punches Amanda from Motherland, and now she's divorced. She's been forced to move to South Halsden near her mother, played by Joanna Lumley. And this is directed by Simon Bird, interestingly, and has a cast including Siobhan McSweeney and Rashenda Sandal. Kay, I'm going to you again. Did you have a good time in Amandaland?
I did have a good time. I love this character, even in Motherland. Well, I should say, right, Motherland is a show that I absolutely adore. I've watched it probably about three times, all three series. And so I was a bit nervous about this because I thought, oh, God. I don't.
Because the principal three are not in this.
No, they're not. Yeah.
Well, it's a spin-off.
Yeah, and, but you know, they could have cameoed in the first one. Otherwise, it'd just be Motherland, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
but yeah, exactly. They do not appear at any point.
And so I was nervous, but I had no need to be because a large portion. I need to check. I think all of the writers, except for Sharon Horgan, were still writing on this. Boyd will check the facts now.
thanks.
And the caliber, you know, the quality of writing, the caliber of the performances are as high as you would hope and expect. Lucy Punch is fantastic. She's such a great comic actress. I mean, she gives good face. And she, can,
she gives good
doesn't
face.
Doesn't she? She's so good. Her facial reactions, which sounds like a stupid thing to say, but if you when you see the first episode, you'll know what I mean. Anne, her old stooge from Motherland, is very much a firm fixture in this. And so, as you say, so Amanda has basically had a fall from grace. She's had to move from Chiswick to South Halsden, which she amusingly calls Soha, which I appreciated. And she's finding her feet. She's divorced. She's had to sell her store, not shop, Higa-Tiga, everyone's calling it. And she's moved her kids out of private education. They're now at the comprehensive, which she thinks is fine because it, you know, it'll be a fast track to Oxford. She's making the best of it, but she is displaced. And what's interesting is that it takes for her to bump into Anne, for her to get the confidence again, to assert her social, you know, dominance. And, you know, there are new characters in this, which are, you know, who I also really enjoyed, which is a character called Mal, who is her neighbour. She lives in a flat. Can you even bear it? She lives in a flat. She is at pains to tell everyone it's the top flat. He's underneath. And he deals with her very, very well. So what's interesting is she's a big fish in a small pond, she thinks, but actually it's about how these other characters interact with her. So you've got Mal, you've got, as you say, Siobhan McSweeney, who is a celebrated chef who obviously Amanda makes a beeline for and who can't really stand her but endures her. She's in a power couple with Fee, as you said, played by Rashenda Sandal. And yeah, it's fun, it is funny, great performances. I really enjoyed it. It has not besmirched the legacy of Motherland.
Question I wanted to put to you guys, because Lucy Punch's character in Motherland is great, but she is a really great supporting character because she is, by definition, kind of caricatured, a little bit abrasive. She's quite a lot. And they deploy her with a certain... They're judicious in how much they put her in Motherland, and she's very effective how she works. Now, my concern with this is, like, you can have too much of a good thing, that maybe because of the nature of that character, it would be too much in a show like this. Did either of you find that at all?
No,
because I'll tell you why. Because they deploy Joanna Lumley as her mother, and Joanna Lumley's, that character explains so much of her character, of Amanda's character.
Yeah, softening her.
Because she, compared to her mother, she is like a normal person, because her mother is like a borderline monstrous figure who can barely,
not
you know...
Not borderline.
She's a monstrous figure. Okay, fine. You know, who will like barge into her house willy-nilly because she's being, just doesn't want to deal with her carer because she's got various health issues that she is ignoring. And just her whole manner is like Amanda times 100. So I think that makes Amanda seem much less extreme than she was when we met her mummy briefly in one episode, didn't we, in Motherland. But to have her as a constant presence popping in and out of the thing totally softens Amanda and makes, and you also feel sorry for, because they put her in situations. So the situation she ends up when she meets the couple played by Siobhan McSweeney
and Rashenda Sandal,
is so unfortunate and excruciating and, you know, embarrassing when she goes to the party that their teenage daughter throws for the class, if you like. They put her in, you do feel sorry for her. So you know, even though she is a ridiculous figure in some ways, she's a hilarious figure. I think it's, if you said It's one of those things, isn't it? People are often asking if you could do a spin-off. People said it for Afterlife, and people say it for all kinds of brilliant ensemble shows. Who would you do a spin-off with? This is the right choice, because she's a character who's now fleshed out and deepened and works on multiple levels more, I think, than she ever did in Motherland, even though she was brilliant in Motherland all the way through. I'm not saying, you know, but she's definitely fleshed out.
Yeah, she has more depth here.
I think so.
I think even in Motherland, because I was thinking about this, because she wasn't a caricature. She was nuanced, and that's the thing. She wasn't just this mean-spirited or, you know, aloof. She wasn't a total monster herself, because, as you say, we got to see her relationship with Joanna Lumley, which explained a lot, her relationship with her husband as well.
Of course, yeah.
You understood why she was how she was, and you felt a sympathy towards her, especially in the last series.
So you're right. But what I'm saying is I think you definitely feel more. I think you get more of her and more of an explanation of her personality and more insight, in-depth kind of character. I mean, it's still, by the way, a fucking hilarious, really funny half-hour sitcom. That's all it is, and it's as funny as that. There's a slapstick moment where she gets a ball in her head, football kicked in her head, which
genuinely,
is just brilliant.
Genuinely,
that's
genius.
What I'm talking about,
so
the funny. Face acting.
Yeah. It's such a funny moment.
Very funny.
And talking of editing, as you were saying, that timing on that is perfect.
Yeah, it is spot on.
But in the hot tub, actually, she's very good.
It's really funny. That's the thing, you know. And when it is most of the Holly Walsh, Helen Serafinowicz, Baronko Shaughnessy, Lawrence Rickett. I think he may be new. He worked on Ghosts and other shows like that. The writing is so good. We've got two brilliant comedies this week, but maybe three with Am I Being Unreasonable, mm-hmm. which we haven't got time to review, but it's a series two. But this is every bit. This has got all the kind of qualities that I said about Big Boys in a way, that it's, you know, it's relentlessly funny, but again, it's not silly. You believe in the characters. The comedy is coming from them. The new characters are brilliant. Those are the two I mentioned. I think Samuel Anderson, as you said, is fantastically underplayed as her neighbor. I've known him. He's in the History Boys. He's in Gavin and Stacey's, and he's in the bunch of mates of that Smithy has, you know, with Russell Tovey, etc. When he brought all his mates and the History Boys on board to play the gang of mates in that, so people recognise him from there. He is fantastic, and this is so funny. And I just think it's a complete joy. Yeah, I mean, again, two really, really, really good comedies in the same week, and possibly three.
The only thing I obviously struggle with here is the cringe factor of this is quite high.
Of course.
Like more so than Motherland, I found. Mm. So I was like, there were parts of this I'm like, oh, this is hard for me to watch. Like I was struggling with it a little bit. Like it is really good, as you say, but honestly, I think the cringe for me is just a little bit too unbearable.
Well, I was sitting there thinking, how is James going to deal with some of this?
Thank you. Yes.
It's so brilliantly done.
Yeah, it's fantastically well done.
Yes, it is, as you say, very, very well done. And where can we find Amanda Land?
BBC One, Wednesday, 5th of February, 9 p.m, followed by Am I Being Unreasonable at 9:30.
I should jump in very, very quickly and say, I believe the editor of Big Boys, I believe, is Gareth McEwen, who edited series two of the show. So I'm assuming it's about series three. I could be wrong, could be someone else, but I believe it's Gareth McEwen. So well done, Gareth, if it was you. If it wasn't you, well done for season two, but less well done here.
If you're wrong, we'll just edit this out.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Okay, what else have we missed, Boydie? What have we not covered?
It's quite a big week, actually. There is Mussolini, Son of the Century, which
that's
is quite a big, epic Sky Atlantic show.
This is Joe Wright, isn't it?
Joe Wright's directed it, of Atonement, etc. fame. Very talented. And it kind of looks at the rise and rise of Benito Mussolini. You may have heard of him in Italy in 1919 to 1924, particularly. And it's supposed to be really good. I haven't had time to watch it yet. We probably should have reviewed it, but it's a busy week. Sex Lives of College Girls, which is a really popular and good show,
which we've never covered on this podcast.
I know, sorry. Yeah, it's really good. This is, I think, season three, ITV2 from Tuesday the 4th, and it'll be on ITVX as well.
I feel like this is a show we should have covered. Yeah. I feel like maybe we should cover this in some form on Pilot Plus, because it's supposed to be a good show and we've never covered it.
I've watched many episodes. It's really good.
Yeah, but we've never discussed it. So maybe that's something we should do on Thursday.
Keep your helm. As I mentioned earlier, like five times, Am I Being Unreasonable, which is Kay's favourite show, pretty much.
I do love it.
Created by Daisy May Cooper, is on Wednesday 5th, 9:30, after Amanda Land. Borders is back. There's two, in fact, the two teen comedies of last year are back both this week, which is quite either a weird coincidence or one of them brought it forward because they thought it would benefit them to have them in the same week. So Borders, which is the one about five young black students who are given scholarships to a posh college to improve the public relations of that place. It's, it was really good. That's back on BBC Three on Monday, the 3rd of February at 9 o'clock, created by Daniel Lawrence Taylor of Time Wasted Fame. That, I really like that series. I also like Gwed, which was the Liverpool-based kind of like, almost like an in-betweener style.
It, did we
review it? Oh, cool.
Yes, because then James started doing the accent.
Well,
oh,
no, I'm
God, horrific, yeah. Now you come to mention it. That's back on ITV2, Thursday the 6th of February, 10:05 p.m. and ITVX. Apple Cider Vinegar is a thing on Netflix on Thursday. This is quite, they're kind of publicising this one quite a lot. And it's a six-part comedy drama based on a true story. Actually, apparently it opens with a note saying a true-ish story based on a lie, which is about people who built an empire, an online health empire, but it was all bullshit and based on nonsense, stuff and nonsense. Clean Slate is on Prime Video on Thursday. This is a comedy with George Wallace, plays a character blindsided by the return of his child after 17 years, and that child turns out to now be a trans woman played by Laverne Cox of Orange is the New Black fame. Oh my God, there's so much on this week. Mm-hmm. I haven't finished yet. This Love is... You to Death is a Spanish language show that you should have watched, Kate, because you are
that's on Apple.
Our foreign language.
I'm currently trying to watch the whole of the first series of Severance for our spoiler special.
Are you though?
Well, today I watched three episodes.
Oh,
yes.
Fucking hell.
Yeah,
wow.
Thank you.
Ooh, we better do that now.
Yeah, we really have to.
In your effing faces.
Love You to Death is a high concept thing about someone who's diagnosed with heart cancer who falls for someone else. It's like a romance built around health issues, shall we say. Love You to Death, Apple TV Plus. That's on Wednesday, the 5th of February. I think that might be it, but I'm already exhausted.
God, it's a bumper week, isn't it?
Fucking bumper week.
And of course, you buried the lead, which is of course the third season of hit animated show Invincible, which of course comes to Prime Video, a show that is beloved by all. Except for the people on this podcast, because we don't really do animation. But genuine, Invincible is kind of a phenomenon. People do absolutely love it. So if you are one of the many people who love Invincible, that is back, and it is on Prime Video on Thursday the 6th.
You're absolutely right. And I've forgotten one more thing, which is that Hacks comes to Sky on the 7th. They're starting at season 1. But on that day, you'll be able to get on demand the most recent season 3 that actually went out
How
a year ago in the States.
That?
So Hacks season 3 is available on Friday the 7th, along with the rest of Hacks. I think... Oh my God, yeah, I think that was it.
Okay, it is unclear which one of these things we will cover on Pilot Plus, but I think we should do, like, we'll discuss this, I think we should do a Sex Life of College Girls things. I think we should go, I'm going to go back to the first season and watch the beginning of it so we can talk about that, and we can probably pick out something else from this week, but, you know, you'll find out about that on Thursday. What's our pick of the week? Oh, wow. it's a proper Sophie's Choice, isn't it?
This is hard.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to go Big Boys.
Yeah, I was thinking.
I was so impressed watching it.
It was a
Big
Boyd.
Big Boys.
Yeah, I think I am as well. Mm. It was between Amanda Land. I love
They're all great. It's a great week.
But between the comedies, I was going to go between, those two, and I am, because it's the final series and he's going out on a high.
Despite my love of Garrett McEwan's editing, I will have to go with Unforgotten because it is Unforgotten, and I can't. It's a great week.
It's hard. We can't choose this one.
No.
And I felt bad. I couldn't make it to the launch of Big Boys because I was at football. I
think you were about to say because Kay was hosting and she wouldn't let me. So.
No, I don't think you hosted it, were you?
No, I went. So
I'll make it pick of the week for that as well. But it deserves to be.
As an apology. An apology from Boyd.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
You couldn't possibly miss a match.
No, I can't miss so much, Kay. It's just the way it is.
That is it for this week's Pilot TV podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating, because we do appreciate your ratings. It helps us to get seen. That's lovely. And please subscribe to us on our YouTube channel, the Pilot TV YouTube channel, where you can find all of these episodes in glorious Technicolor, as you may be watching us at the moment. You can see me gesticulating wildly like this. Follow us on the social medias at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, at James T. Dyer, at Pilot TV Pod. Maybe join us on the subreddit as well if you are, inclined to hang out with Kay, being the subredditor that she is. On next week's show, what are we going to be covering? Oh my God, I don't even know where to start. Cobra Kai is finally finishing. So this is Cobra Kai Season 6 Part 3, which is almost beyond parody at this point, but that's a thing that's happening. But Yellow Jackets, I should say, returns next week with its third season, which I am excited to see on Paramount Plus. Don't know whether that's embargoed. We will find out. It doesn't air till the 14th. So it's a little up in the air what we're going to be covering next week. But join us, please, on Monday and find out.
I felt like in my snake skin today, I was a bit Cobra K.
Oh, Dad, that's good.
Especially Cobra Kai.
Yes. No flies on you.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Cobra Kai. Okay, brilliant. We're off. I'm going to go and watch the final episode of The West Wing.
Oh, God.
Until I start it again next week.
Help us.
Pilot out.